Welcome to A Life Lived Backwards, One Man's Life, the accompanying podcast to Larry Ruttman's memoir, A Life Lived Backwards, an existential triad of friendship, inquisitiveness, and maturation. Hi there, I'm Jordan Rich with a pretty easy task and a fun one at that. I pose questions to Larry, and with that razor-sharp memory of his and a great talent for storytelling, well, you just have to settle back and enjoy the ride. Larry, whenever we get together and talk baseball, it's really fun. We turn the fun register up a couple of hundred notches. And we wanted to have you reflect on one of your favorite players, a guy we talked about on this podcast, a guy who everybody talked about when he was here, Mookie Betts, because he returned to Fenway Park in a Dodger uniform in August of the year that we're recording this, and didn't exactly disappoint, let's put it that way. He wowed the crowd. He put on a clinic, didn't he?
Yeah, it was great. He hit through the whole series, and he was wonderful. Tell me something, Jordan. Let's start off this way. You were a fan. You're a big baseball fan. What did you think of Mookie Betts as a player and a man?
When he was here, he was exceptional, obviously, in all areas. He was a great fielder, a terrific hitter, clutch hitter. But what impressed me about Mookie Betts was the fact that he did a lot for the community. He was never one of these guys who would say, it's all about me. He was a team player. I mean, he did all the things that you want, and particularly you want in a superstar. And it pained me when he left. I think it pained you, too, when he left.
Oh, God, I was in great pain.
Yeah, yeah. But what were your impressions of him when he was here in Boston and as a Red Sox?
I don't know whether I've ever told you about my prediction on Mookie Betts, but he began with the Red Sox in 2014. Now, I don't know how I came upon this, but I predicted then, when he had like four or five major league home runs, that he would become the superstar that he became. And at that time, the Red Sox were thinking of him as a marginal second baseman, and he might make the major leagues, but he wouldn't. Nothing fantastic about him. I watched him field, and I watched him run, and then I saw him hit a ball into the second deck late in August. I think maybe it was in Toronto. And I said to myself, this kid could become a great player. So I wrote a letter to Ben Cherington, who was the manager at the time, general manager.
GM, right.
At the time, and I said, Ben, Don't let this guy go. Don't use him as a trading chip. You know, I'm predicting that he's going to become a great player. I've watched him and done nothing much so far, but there's just something about him that I can't explain it. So Ben writes back to me that we're thinking along the same lines, Larry. We're with you, something like that. So then, you know what happened. I mean, in 2015. He started immediately blossoming into the great player he became. And now, at 10 years into his career, he's got exceptional stats batting-wise. The second baseman he was and never played there, maybe one or two games for the Red Sox, he played this year second base in a lot of games, shortstop in a lot of games, right field in a lot of games.
He's very good as a utility guy. He can move around the bases.
He's exceptional in all phases of the game.
Can we talk a little bit about his power? Because baseball players who hit home runs don't all necessarily look like Harmon Killebrew. Many of them are slender, and it's the bat speed and all kinds of things. But why is he such a good power hitter in your estimation?
Well, I will answer that question, but I want to complete what I said here. I'll answer that question. Okay, well, his wife got him to be in the home run hitting contest this year, and he didn't do particularly well. And, of course, he didn't do well because he doesn't hit 450-foot-plus home runs, for which they give you a bonus number of bats. But he hits 410 or 20 or 30-foot home runs, and he does it a lot because he's got great bat speed. He's very athletic. When you watch him hit, you realize that his 5'9" frame generates a lot of power. And this year, by the end of August, he was up to like 39 home runs and then went into a bit of a swoon, but still wound up hitting over 300, scoring well over 125 runs, setting a major league record for runs batted in by a leadoff batter. I mean, it was a great performance fielding-wise and batting-wise, running-wise, everything. He finds a way to win. If he gets on first base, he's a good bet to score. And so where does he get that power? I think he gets that power from exquisite timing, exquisite athleticism, and confidence, and the ball jumps off his bat. And when he's hitting right, it goes far enough to get well over the fence.
There are roughly 600-plus major league players, and you have to be pretty darn good to make the majors. We know that. But some players stand out from the beginning, and you obviously saw something in him even before the rest of us maybe did. What is that magic? Can you describe what it is? I mean, you sort of described it a minute ago, but what is it that makes a player stand out beyond all other players? I mean, besides the stats, is there stuff in the DNA? Is it the training? Is it the Little League? What is it, do you think?
Well, you've heard of five-tool players. He's a six-tool player, and you alluded to this before. It comes from a great family. His mother brought him up right. Nobody's ever going to have trouble with Mookie Betts over drugs, saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. He's just a wonderful human being. When he came to the Dodgers, traded, unfortunately, from the Red Sox, he immediately took a leadership role in the clubhouse. They looked to him as the leader of the team. He and Freddie Freeman are an unbelievable combination as the 1-2 batters. Who wouldn't want to have them up 1-2? They'll get on more and they'll hit more. And I think that what I saw in 2014 that really nobody else saw. I don't think anybody else made that prediction. I saw all the things that we've been talking about, fielding, running, hitting. But I think that it came to me, I say, from who knows where, that this was going to be what he was like all the time. Mm. And that he was going to convert this into greatness. So I made that prediction.
Consistency. That's what I note in players like that. David Ortiz, when he was in his prime, that sense that at any time he can do it. He can bring it. Even in a slump, you know he's going to break out of a slump.
Yeah, but just hitting. I mean, Mookie was all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Slap hitter, can throw the ball everywhere. In pre-free agency days, you could have a player like Mookie Betts become an easily 10-year player, and then career-wise, he'd be a Yastrzemski. He'd be here for 23 years. That's pretty much almost impossible nowadays, isn't it, with one team? I mean, maybe you can look at Salmon, for instance, out there on the West Coast.
He should have been here for his whole career.
Yeah, but it's so difficult, Larry, it seems, because of agencies and agents.
Well, the Red Sox management, they blamed it on Bloom. I don't think Bloom really traded him. I think he was under the influence of the owner, of the owners, the two owners now, and I think that they didn't want to pay him what the Dodgers were willing to pay him. The Dodgers threw up their hands and said, "My God, we got him," and they signed him in no time to a $400 million contract. But to continue the story, as Mookie developed, I wrote a story called My 82-Year Love Affair with Fenway Park from Teddy Ballgame to Mookie Betts. It's about a 60-page story. It's sort of a junior memoir, a baseball memoir. I don't know whether you've read it. You should read it.
I have. We've talked about it. We've done podcasts on it. I've read it. It's
okay,
great.
Yeah. So that and he was part of that story, and that prediction that I made is in there, pages 50 or so. And so that was published, and I sent it to Mookie, and I sent it to a bunch of other guys over in the Red Sox, and it's got a play. It was published in 9, the baseball journal. And whether he ever read it, I don't know. But anyway, he's coming back to Fenway for the first time. So I get in touch with Sam Kennedy, whom I know quite well, the president of the Red Sox, and said I'd like to present a copy of this book inscribed by myself to Mookie Betts. I suppose there's going to be some sort of a recognition of him, and I'd like to be there to do it. And they said, well, we'll see what we can do. And they were in touch with me. They were always very kind to me over at the Red Sox. And but because of communication between the Red Sox and the Dodgers, there wasn't a specific event other than him destroying the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And so that didn't come to pass. But what they did was they invited Lois and me for the day, Saturday, to sit in the VIP box and to view the game. And they even offered to take the copy and present it to them, but I didn't trust them to – not that I didn't trust them, but I things get lost in transmission.
Right.
So, but it'll get to them, and it's not so easy to get to a superstar like that. But I want him to see it because it's a nice inscription. And the day was unbelievable. The first thing that they dropped us off, they took our car, parked it for us. We walked into the elevator that goes upstairs. Big, handsome guy is standing next to me, and I turn to him and I say, you know, I really think you look an awful lot like Dwight Evans. And he says, I am.
Oh, wow. Dewey Evans. Great.
So we talked, and he's a very handsome guy. Talked to Lois. He was very nice. Went upstairs, went to the VIP box. Mookie hit a home run that day.
Yep.
And so the game came down to the final out, and the Dodgers had the bases were loaded, and they could have won the game. Mookie comes up, and he hits a bullet to center field, and the guy takes it right in front of the center field fence. That's how the game ended.
Yeah.
He had three other hits.
Yeah. By the way, talk about the ovation he got when he came out.
Oh, he got a tremendous ovation. He's so popular. And we were up there were a couple of guys. They played the a couple of guys from Los Angeles sitting next to us in the VIP sitting outside.
Sure.
And so I said, they would cheer in him and I was cheering him. I said, hey, we're on the same team today.
Well, I think that's what a fan, a true fan of a player is going to do. I mean, we're always bleeding Red Sox red, but when the Dodgers come to town and there's Mookie Betts, who was such a hero, you want to see him do well. I mean, it would be nice if the Red Sox had a better season, but that's water under the dam. You want to see him do well. You're rooting for the guy because he's a good guy. He's a nice guy.
Well, you know, Red Sox fans have always been good that way. I mean, I remember Joe DiMaggio getting big hands in Fenway Park. I saw that series in 1947 when he was out with a heel injury, came back and destroyed the Red Sox with home runs in every game of a three-game series where the Sox swept the Red Sox. And Joe was a great player, not such a wonderful guy, but a great player. We cheered him all the time.
Absolutely. So prediction for Mookie Betts, definitely on his way to the Hall of Fame if he stays healthy?
Not only is he on his way to the Hall of Fame, he's going to be one of the great players in baseball history beyond the average Hall of Fame player. I'll remind you of a few things. He's halfway through his career now. He's got the kind of body that's going to take him, presumably, unless something awful happens injury-wise, to a 19 or a 20-year career. He's going to wind up with over 500 home runs with as a leadoff hitter with like 1,400 or 1,500 runs batted in, about 2,000 or more runs scored. He's going to have a lifetime average, something like 290 or 295. He's going to have total bases. When somebody has more than 5,000 total bases, they're really something.
Mm.
And he's going to have more than 5,000 total bases.
And there's one more thing that you haven't mentioned that is very meaningful to me, and I know it will be to you.
Gold gloves?
No. Well, no. It's a little more esoteric than all that. It's nothing to do with the talent on the field. It's got to do with his first name. By being Mookie Betts, he nullifies the Mookie Wilson curse, in my opinion. He makes 86 a little easier to handle because that was a different Mookie, a different time. We like our Mookie that played for the Red Sox and won us a big, big championship.
Well,
how do you like that, huh?
I like it.
Well, I'm going to go with it.
I'd buy it.
Larry, as always, talking baseball with you is as much fun as anything. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jordan. I mean, I love to talk baseball, and I love Mookie Betts.
This has been A Life Lived Backwards, One Man's Life. The accompanying podcast to Larry Ruttman's memoir, A Life Lived Backwards, an existential triad of friendship, inquisitiveness, and maturation. You can subscribe and download this podcast, available on all podcast platforms. For information on Larry, his books, lectures, and much more, visit the website larryruttman.com. Also check out the extensive Larry Ruttman page on Wikipedia. This is Jordan Rich inviting you to join us again next time as Larry shares more stories about friendship, inquisitiveness, and maturation on A Life Lived Backwards, One Man's Life.